Welcome to the Chicago Camps Podcast, brought to you in partnership with Simplecast. Publish your podcasts the easy way at simplecast.fm. Today, we're speaking with Nishant Kathari, a Speaker Camp mentor for Speaker Camp Seattle on February 28th. Nishant is a talented author, speaker, and now co-founder of Minky, a design and technology company in Seattle. He also posts a lot of photos online of his dog, Yoshi. Hey, Nishant.
Hey, how's it going, Russ?
Good. How are you?
Good. Doing well.
Thank you very much for joining us for Speaker Camp Seattle. We're excited that you'll be a mentor for us. I've seen you speak a handful of times at least, and we've been at a few conferences together. I'm excited that someone who I look up to as a speaker can join us and help others really improve their skills and get started with a strong foot forward. So thank you very much for helping us.
Oh, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Yeah, I feel mutually about your speaking skills, Russ. That was awkward. what I was going to get at was I'm actually genuinely excited for this because I have friends who've been in Toastmasters. I don't know how familiar you are with Toastmasters. You know, where they teach you how to speak from scratch.
I am absolutely familiar with them, and
yeah,
it's a different type of thing.
It's a very different type of thing, and I think it's good for people who are really afraid of public speaking and have absolutely no experience, and it's a good place to build your confidence. But you've been speaking for a long time, and I think to get really good at it, you need to just get comfortable enough to tell a story, and I think you guys are creating an environment to do that, and I think that's really cool.
Well, thanks. We hope that we can bring in, 120 or so new speakers this year. And that to us is a big part of improving the diversity that we'll see at technology conferences. The more competition we put out there, the less likely we are to see a guy like me at an event. And that's good because there'll be better speakers.
Exactly. I think you just cut to like the last question you were going to ask me, but that's pretty much my answer.
Well, why don't we get started with how did you get started in public speaking?
It was actually really, really weird. I kind of happened to fall into it. As a sophomore in college, I got asked to lecture a class. So I had to split lecturing this class between me and another professor. And I'll spare you the details. It's just I had contributed to a textbook that was going to become the textbook for that class, and I was supposed to take that class, but they didn't know how to give me credit because I had contributed to the textbook. So they made me actually teach, which was so bizarre because I taught to juniors while I was a sophomore, and I was going to be taking that class as a junior the next year. And I'll tell you, there's no better training ground for public speaking than higher ed as a student, because it's brutal. It's so brutal.
Wow. I've done my share of teaching. Gosh, I've been in bands and, we've done the workshop things and stuff, and it's a little mortifying, but you were, you were teaching people older than you. How old were you? Were you like 11 or 12 there, Doogie?
No, I was 20 or 21. And yeah, like I was so nervous. I went to my first lecture. I went hungover. I was just like, there's no way for me to get through it. So I went drunk. It helped because it really calmed my nerves. So that's my first piece of advice, man. Just get yourself a drink.
Now I have to wonder if every time I've seen you present, you've been hammered.
No, that's just me. I would apologize, but I mean, that's just me.
So that's where you really got started in public speaking. But what was your first conference that you spoke at?
It was, I think it was shortly thereafter. I spoke at, do you know SIGGRAPH?
Yeah.
Special Interest. Yeah. So I spoke at a SIGGRAPH shortly thereafter. Actually, it could have been, you remember FlashKit? Did you ever do Flash?
I was a little decent at Flash.
All right. I was like nuts about Flash, and there were two big conferences back then. One was Flash Forward, and one was FlashKit. and were attached to the websites, right? And FlashKit's first conference I spoke at. So it could have been SIGGRAPH or FlashKit, but either way, that's like 2001 or so.
Wow, there is like nothing but sadness in this podcast so far.
it totally is. It's like an obituary.
I was looking over in my office here, and I can see my one of my articles that I wrote on Flash that I have framed and like tucked away. It's barely poking out and looking a shameful eye at me. So what was your worst or kind of your least significantly bad conference presentation?
I actually had a couple. The first was SIGGRAPH. It was, I think, 2002. I spoke a few times at SIGGRAPH. And whatever year this was, I gave a three-hour workshop on physics and mathematics for game programming. I'm laughing. I can't even say it as I'm talking about it because it was horrible. Like, I was so underprepared. And this is a SIGGRAPH audience, right? So these are people who do hardcore computer graphics for a living. And they accepted this workshop. It was me and this professor, who was also my mentor in college. And it, you know, I did most of the work because I was getting credit for it. And then I had to teach half of it. And it's just, I was way in over my head. And you know, I tried to cut corners, and you know, when we finally gave the workshop, I'll just tell you that the part that made it so horrible was there was this guy who got up probably an hour into the workshop, like stood up in his seat. There were probably 100 people in the room, and he yelled, "This is the biggest waste of time." And he shoved all his stuff, like, and every, it was like an episode of The Office. It was like the most uncomfortable thing, and he shoved all his stuff into a bag and just like stormed out.
He didn't flip the table.
There were like two hours left, right? It was like, and then I was like, all right, I guess we'll go back to my crappy workshop. And I felt really bad for the people, but it was awful. And like the second failure was like this, I tried to co-present with a coworker of mine, and he and I have very different styles, so we had to rehearse the whole thing, and we rehearsed jokes and stuff, and it was just terrible. It was just terrible.
Wow. I usually say in the Speaker Camp workshops that it is very, very rare that I've gotten heckled or that anybody's kind of gone at me. But
yeah.
But wow, you take the cake, my friend. This is awful.
Oh, it was such a great experience because I mean, to be really honest, I walked into it really cocky, right? Because this was probably a year and a half after I'd taught in college, and I'm like, whatever, it's going to be super easy. And I didn't prepare, and I was a 22-year-old that was cocky that he was speaking at conferences, and man, I got it handed to me.
Oh my God, this is the best. So I laugh out of pure empathy for remembering back to how much more I knew when I was in that same type of situation.
Yeah, it was horrifying. Like, I look back at that person and I'm like, man, you were such an embarrassment. But hey, you got to make the mistake.
Yes. So how did you recover from that? But wait, more importantly, why in the heck did you keep doing it after somebody basically said you suck and walked out?
Yeah, that's a really good point. See, I think that's where the cockiness actually helps, because I think I was a little oblivious, and I was just like, well, that kind of sucked, and guess I shouldn't let that happen the next time. But really, it was, looking back, I think it was a pretty pivotal moment, because I beat myself up pretty bad, even as someone who, you know, was not fully self-aware about how bad it was at the time. And it's humiliating. It doesn't matter who you are. It's just humiliating when someone yells at you, like heckles you, and then walks out of your thing. And then you have to deal, like, you just have to deal with the psychology of the room after that. And it was just so many levels of horrible that moment has stuck so well in my mind that anything I do, I over prepare for it. Like, To this day, every talk I give, if it's a 60-minute talk, you can be rest assured that I've put in 60 hours of prep into the talk. So I don't know how I continued. I think I would just say I was ignorant and it wasn't a great decision. And somehow, like, I beat the odds and it worked out and I'm okay now. But I learned a lot from it.
Yeah, I can follow that wholly. You know, there's everybody, I think, has at least that one really bad one. And why we keep doing it is always a mystery. I know, like, Jared Spool tells a story about one of his first presentations. He went to the bathroom beforehand and he leaned over the counter to wash his hands and the counter was wet and he was wearing khakis.
Oh, that's like a nightmare scenario. Like, that's so, I can totally, yeah.
That needs to go in the tips list. Don't wear khakis.
Yeah. Don't bend over the sink, right? Like, before your talk.
Go to the bathroom, but do the arch motion when you wash your hands. So in light of all of that, though, what's kind of the one thing you wish that you and that cocky person would have known about public speaking before you got started, or even as you started doing more of it?
The one thing I wish I would have known about public speaking, well, I think it's related to that. It's that the audience is not there to stroke your ego. They're actually there to learn from your perspective. So it's ironic that if you show them something in a new light, an enlightened light, if you will, they'll actually stroke your ego whether you want it or not. But it's totally lost. Even though it sounds obvious, I feel like it's totally lost in an embarrassingly large number of speakers that I've encountered and you know, I don't know if it's a self-awareness problem or if it's just, you know, people get off on being on a stage. But a lot of speakers don't have a clue about it. And they get up on stage with that air of, hey, I'm Mr. Awesome or I'm Miss Brilliant. And then the performance just deflates from there. It's really painful to watch. And that was something that, you know, when I started out, I'll be fully honest, it was just a rush, right? It's a rush to be standing in front of people and everyone's giving you their undivided attention and want to know what amazing things you have to say in there. But, if you don't get past that at some point quickly, I did, and you have to get past that. You can go 2 decades without knowing that, and it's horrifying because I think the audience knows that. The audience always knows when there's an arrogant person in speaking. So yeah, that's the one thing I wish I knew about public speaking when I got started.
That's really pretty true, and I think you're right that, gosh, even when I look back, I can remember early presentations, and one of my worst ones is one very early one where I thought I would be funny and flat and that I could have a wry sense of humor. And I just listened back to myself and my awful flat jokes. And why did anybody ever, they recorded it. Why did anybody let me speak again?
Yeah, totally.
You know, and you listen to it and you get those chills and you're just, ugh. But I also think that, and you reminded me of this, even if you tell somebody something that they already know, there's value in reinforcing their thinking. There's value in sharing with somebody a like experience, because then they've taken away that they're not crazy in what they've done, or that, you know, you're reinforcing something that they've done because you've learned that as well.
Absolutely. Memory retrieval, reinforcing, imitation, all those things like are pleasurable to the brain, right? So I think all those things have value and people learn like that.
And it's funny because I know the types of books that you read and what you just said about these things being pleasurable to the brain. I just thought of at least one author who rhymes with what? Ariely? Sounds like something he would say.
Totally. It is from one of the weird books I read.
Yes, but that's okay. So, hey, why are you still doing public speaking today?
Honestly, I stayed with it because somehow I've always had jobs that required public speaking. But, you know, I do it today as an independent, you know, business entrepreneur. I don't know what I'm not used to calling myself that, because it's beneficial, right? In many ways, it gets me out there, helps me network and so on. But mostly it's personal. I enjoy it. I generally give talks about things that I've spent a lot of time thinking about. And it's kind of selfish, because the act of writing a talk enforces a certain amount of rigor that helps me formalize my thoughts. I don't know if you've heard that saying, I write to understand what I think. And you know, I write all my talks, and that sums up why I like to do it, because it really lets me get to the bottom of something I've been thinking about really hard, but I haven't been able to quite, connect all the dots.
Well, you know, it also plays into the when you teach, you learn twice.
Totally.
You know, and what I like about it is what you just said, but it also, for me, if I've learned something, I feel some sort of obligation to be able to find a way to share that, and that this has worked for me, and maybe it'll help you with whatever you're figuring out. And so as I have to sit down and formulate the stories and make sure I understand from whence I came, it does just what you said. It really forces you to kind of cement that and understand it even more thoroughly what you just did.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up, because I, you've been to my talks, and I started out wanting to speak about topics that I would think are they're pretty esoteric for the kind of conferences that we're at, right? Like I'm talking a lot about cognitive psychology and neuroscience, and not even in the context of designing things, but in the context of how people behave because of those things and how those behaviors cause organizations to do all sorts of weird things. That started out actually because it was something that I struggled with a lot at work. I couldn't quite wrap my head around why people did things the way they did. And I was at that weird place that I would just label people as evil or stupid or some combination of the two. And then I happened to read a bunch of stuff that dramatically shifted my perspective, and in the process, I got so much peace of mind, right? And I grew this sense of humor, or developed a sense of humor about looking at things from a different, and it's true what they say, like everything is just about perspective. So initially when I started, the first time I gave a talk around one of those topics, it was really like, I wanted to just jump up on stage and go, guys, I figured it out. People are actually not just evil and stupid. It's actually this, and I'm that too. And here's how we can fix it. Or here's how we can at least, Yeah, so I totally relate to that. That's honest. It's a good reminder for me that that's really a part of why I speak.
That's fantastic. So the last question, which we touched on at the beginning, so I think it's great that we'll come full circle here, is why do you hope others, more people, will start doing more presenting at conferences?
Yep, and it's kind of what you started with earlier on the podcast, but it's because the best ideas are hiding somewhere at some dinner table conversation, right? And unfortunately, too much of public speaking still seems to be driven by ego, at least, or maybe I'm watching the wrong talks or going to the wrong conferences. But I think people are just hungry for new ways to think about things. And from my experience, that means we need new blood, right? That's the best way to have those new ways to think. I mean, there are benefits like, it builds your confidence, and there are all these personal benefits that you get out of public speaking, but I honestly don't care about this. I care about what I want, and that's for people to share awesome ideas with me so I can go back and think about them and do something with them. And it can save me some time from running into a wall for 10 years about something because someone told me something cool. And I'm like, cool. I don't have to do something stupid for the next 10 years and not know about it.
That's funny. And you keep reminding me of things that kind of focus why I continue to do it. And one of the things for me is that I'm evolving. I mean, some of my more recent talks are about leadership things that I've figured out, and dare I say hacked together or just learned around. And as I get to talk about those more and apply kind of the UX things I've learned in my career to it, it makes me recognize that I don't want to talk about wireframes anymore. And so I need to continue to evolve the things that I talk about as I learn them so that somebody else can come in and talk about those other things. You know, that's truly important too, that we get new people talking about that stuff.
Totally. And then you have new people who are actually doing those new things on a daily basis. We're talking about it as opposed to old people like us who are talking about stuff we used to do.
Well, I mean, and so this is exactly why I think that there is plenty of room on the lawn. There's all kinds of spaces for new people to come up. There are all kinds of local meetups and communities that will benefit from 1, 2, 3, 10 more new people finding topics to share. You know, even if it's one or two people or just presenting to your cats to solidify the ideas, that stuff really helps. I'm not saying I've done that, but
you've been watching me.
I think we've been Skyping with our cats in the background. But I mean, you know, genuinely sharing that stuff is always, it's very rare that something negative comes out about it if you're sharing an experience and you're putting that out there. So I think that's such a positive thing. And I don't know, if you're working in design at all and you don't know how to present very well, that's definitely an area that you should focus on, those presentation and facilitation skills and all of that good stuff. But I think we share a mind with a lot of that stuff, so that's really cool. And I wanted to thank you, man, once again for helping us out. I'm so excited that you get to impart some of this awesome wisdom that, you know, the guy who was cocky 15 years ago to the guy who's still a little cocky, but just a whole hell of a lot warmer and a good soul. I think it'll be fantastic that you'll be there helping us out. You know, you are definitely one of the shining lights of speakers that I've been fortunate enough to get to see.
Oh, I love you too, man.
Thanks a lot. We will see you on February 28th.
All right. Thanks, bud. Talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Chicago Camps podcast, brought to you in partnership with Simplecast. Publish your podcasts the easy way at simplecast.fm. And learn more about Speaker Camp and other Chicago Camps events on our website at chicagocamps.org.